The award-winning movie The Green Book tells of an unlikely friendship of a black pianist and a Bronx bar or nightclub bouncer who he hired to take him on a tour in the southern part of the United States in the 1950s. And it speaks of the racial tension of the 1950s. You might ask, why is it called The Green Book? Well, the full title it's really taken from is The Negro's Motorist's Green Book. And it was written by a guy called Victor Book. And Victor Green writes this book, and it lists all the places in America throughout the country that welcomed all races, in particular blacks, throughout the country. It first published in 1936, and it continued to be published every year. Basically, it highlights restaurants, mostly restaurants, motels, that would welcome. And if black motorists were driving across America, and there was nowhere in that town that it might even be listed as a hostile environment for black people, and they would drive right on by to avoid conflict. This is in the 50s when there was a lot of work being opened up to blacks across the country. And it tells a powerful story. But Victor Green writes in a 1948 edition of the book, he says, "One day this book will no longer be needed to be published because every man will be welcomed everywhere." Now, Victor Green died in 1960 before that actual premise came true. But in 1967, they stopped publishing the book because it was no longer needed, because segregation was banned in 1965 in the earlier 60s and throughout the whole country in 1966. That powerful story illustrates the inherent sin to segregate people according to different features, if you would. Racism speaks about a color, but there's a ton of other isms out there that basically we segregate by either a feature of the human being or whether by a action or what we might even determine as a sin. We segregate them and say they're not welcome. They're not worthy. And they're segregated to the side. This temptation, Jesus speaks pointedly today in today's gospel. Because just a prelude to today's gospel here in Luke is that the Pharisees and the religious leaders were irritated with Jesus and they were trying to trip him up. And so they provoked the crowd to ask these false dilemma questions. So should it be this or should it be that? Hoping that he will always accept one or two, and he always, of course, creates a third option, reframes the question. In this case, he was saying the Galileans, were they sinful? These Galileans who died by being killed by Pilate, whose blood then was mingled in the temple, which would have made everyone in the temple dirty, right? Which would have made it all contaminated. Of course, if he come in favor of Pilate, against Pilate, then they would have reported him to Pilate. If he came in favor then, they would have caught him and saying, hey, then all the sacrifice is wrong. So it was one of those false dilemmas. And of course, he reframes the question. He says, oh, do you think they're more sinful than every other Galilean? You're all sinful. And he gives a more modern example of the time. A tower had fallen and 18 people in Jerusalem had died. And he says, do you think they're more sinful because they happened to become an accident? A tower fell on them? He says, no, you're all just as much sinful as they. That was an accident. And there's no difference between them and you. And he goes on to get them to repent because God is merciful. He reminds them that God has patience. And he tells this beautiful parable of the fig tree. Now remember, a fig tree when planted takes 2 years to bear fruit. So the third year you'd expect in your fruit. And no fruit, then cut it down. The gardener says, no, wait. Give it another year. Jesus is that gardener in the field, if you would, of humanity. He's saying, given us another chance. Listen, don't be judging other people by their exterior. Don't be judging people by their sins. I am the only judge, he says. And he goes on to say, I'm the only one who should be doing any judging. And I'm giving people another chance. And so he talks about how he digs around the fig tree to give it an opportunity. Well, that opportunity is for us. Those sinful, that unproducing plant is taken to every one of us as disciples. That we are, it's not enough. Notice that the fig tree didn't do any evil. It didn't produce bad fruit. It just didn't produce any fruit. Right? And so we might not sometimes think that we're not doing any evil. So therefore, I'm not doing anything bad. Well, we might not be doing any good either. We're not actually producing good fruit, bearing fruit that we are called to do. And the temptation is to think that we're better off than someone else who might be more obvious in sin. But we're called not to judge them. We're called to tend to our own house, to be ever more humble about our own stance before God, and to not be so quick to think that we will be the lucky ones, but rather that we thank the Lord for his mercy, and then we try all the harder to bear fruit and to allow the Lord to bear fruit in our lives through Christ. So what will that mean for us? Like we're in the middle of Lent. We're halfway through Lent, and some of us have probably got tired of the Lenten practice, or we failed and we've sort of given up on them, or maybe we've succeeded. And we say, well, then let's try some more. I think that we have to look for God in the ordinary moments of our daily life. It's not always seek extraordinary intervention by God. And that's where this first reading from the book of Exodus speaks about Moses and the burning tree. Moses doesn't, like God doesn't talk to Moses through a thunderous cloud of loud, big, bounding voice. But he first takes the attention of Moses by a bush that was not being consumed, that was burning. And you can almost see it, like Moses looks at the bush and it's burning, but it's not consumed. And so, he moves closer. And as he moves closer, he hears this gentle voice, Moses, Moses. And he goes, well, oh my gosh, that's God. But he had to move. He had to notice something ordinary, but that it wasn't quite right. And as he moved closer, then he heard the voice of God. And then he was given the instructions to go do what he was called to do, which is something pretty momentous. He was going to lead the people out of Israel, out of captivity, into their freedom through the desert. But the first step for Moses was to move close to something off here. I wonder if we could look again at our lives and look around us and see, where is the burning bush in our own community, in our own families, in our own extended community? And that we realize that as we move closer, we will be on holy ground. And as we seek that holy ground, to listen attentively how God is guiding us. It's not often, it's not common that we get some extraordinary thing like Moses tonight. It's more common that we'll just do some ordinary things in extraordinary ways. You see, we are called to be humble and to not judge others by the externals, not judge them by their sins. But we're also called to be attentive to God, to be attentive to the voice of God, even in a burning bush, and to recognize in the gathering of every group of human beings is holy ground. to listen attentively and be moved by God's gentle call to convert our lives and to follow Him.